Kevin Leatherbarrow is Libertarian candidate for Superintendent of Public Instruction. Thank you for taking the time.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
For voters who aren't familiar with you or your candidacy, can you please give us a brief introduction?
Yes, my name is Kevin Leatherbarrow. I am an ex-teacher. I run my own business right now for tutoring and helping kids with special needs and everybody else on the spectrum. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
You mentioned you have an education background. You've also run for public office before in the state Senate in the Great Falls area. Why did you choose to run for the superintendent of public instruction this time around?
Well, this one's my specialty, and they actually called me out to run for it. So I had a lot of support behind me within my party and others that had said, hey, listen, you look like the best one here in Montana to take this endeavor up for the Libertarian Party.
And when you say they called you to run for it, is that the Libertarian Party?
Yes, my party, yes. It had asked me to run.
When I visited your candidate Facebook page, I saw the Libertarian banner and it said, no one can run your life better than you. And I'm wondering if you can explain how that would be applied to the public education system in Montana if you were elected.
Well, school choice is a number one. I mean, everybody knows better their children better than the state does. With that school choice, homeschooling, the freedom to be able to educate your children as they see fit.
And how do you see that bearing out either in, you know, specific policies or how the state maybe sends money to public schools or private schools, charter schools, homeschools?
Yeah, we would run that under the voucher system that's in place. There's plenty of models across the country that have worked. There's two distinct models. One is the charter schools would have their own separate board. The other model is the state has a board. So you'd have two boards, one for public education and one for the charter schools. I would think in Montana's model, I think since they're so leery, I think state control of that board would probably be the best in that notion. And I think as it could get off its feet, if we could have a pilot to do that, that'd be great. The voucher system works, and especially what has come up with the COVID, people really, really need to retake a look at this voucher system and see if we can get it moving forward.
And having this separate board that would look at some of these other schools, who would sit on it and what guards would be in place to make sure that public money that was going to these schools were being used for the scope for which it was assigned for?
Well, as it is, if when the school is open and it's okayed by the state, okay, most of the time in other states, the school boards for charter schools are run by parents. So they are in communication, obviously, with the state board of education or OPI or wherever else we're at. And they get to allocate those funds out. They don't go directly to the student, as many people think. They actually go to the school that is okayed by both the state and the charter school board. They have 3 years to complete that charter and make sure they're doing okay. If that charter school is failing in any way in the third year, they do not renew that. And that school has to shut down. Okay. And so there is very high accountability for that.
How long do you think it would take for Montana to set up this new system with charter schools, with this new board overseeing these schools? It seems like a pretty fundamental change to what the education system could look like in Montana.
Yeah, I think a reasonable goal would be 2 or 3 years. I think that's a reasonable goal. And then after that, they usually fire up pretty fast. So they really do get in motion pretty well. I think a good pilot would be maybe get one or two in for the 3 years, see how they do in Montana, and then kind of go from there. And I know that they don't want to privatize education, and I know it's a tough uphill battle, but it does give the parents a smaller classroom sizes. It does give them more choice. I would like to say before we go with these vouchers, if we needed to right now, not necessarily using it for charter schools. I think with the pandemic coming here, there's a lot of special needs kids out there. There's a lot of parents out there that need this help financially who do not want to send their kids to school right now. And they're on online classes and things like that through the districts. These voucher systems would be able to be used with those students to be able to make sure that they're getting their services. Now, let that mean if they're signing up with places that are okayed through the state, the money would go be allocated when that student signs up in that program, let it be for mental health or whichever it is, or tutoring or things like that. And then they oversee that, and then they give the money to them when they bill them. Okay, we're not handing checks out to people to go out and to spend money as they see fit in some of those instances.
If you were elected and wanted to make these changes to the education system in Montana, it's very likely you would be the only libertarian candidate in statewide office. How would you try to accomplish these goals as the only member of your party around?
Well, I'm not part of the establishment. I'm not really, you know, I'm not answering to anybody but number one, myself. Number two, I think this is a subject I think can come across the aisles. It's kind of like a libertarian being in the middle and being able to kind of give that middle road between the arguments and the fights and whatever else is going on up there. Because really, at the end of the day, it's for the health and the benefit of the children and the kids. This model that has been thrusted onto Montana because of COVID is something that I think needs a serious look and serious creativity to be able to bring somebody that has the guts to actually give it a try, because really nothing is going to hurt. Montana's like 26th or 24th in the country, you know, and
26th or 24th in what?
Achievement. In achievement, you know. Anything to try to, you know, get that to move forward or start moving up, we would think that we would want to actually get something done and talk about that and get that those creative juices going with this system.
Why is changing this fundamental structure of the education system, why is that the right way to try to raise achievement scores in the state?
Well, we don't know that until we try. We got to put our feet forward, give it a try, see what happens with it. We're not shutting down any of the other educational systems that are here, private schools or anything else, or public schools. We're just saying, I think we need to have that try.
Recently, schools have been reporting some of their COVID-19 case numbers, and as the head of K-12 public education in the state, how often and what kind of disclosure should be given to parents about COVID-19 cases at schools?
Well, listen, I think there should be total transparency. Okay. Bottom line. And I know every politician out there, I'm not a politician. Okay. I'm a working man just like anybody else. I'm an ex-teacher just like anybody else. I'm one of those guys. Okay. So I'm not one of those who don't hold back. I do believe that the district should have their will in their districts. Whatever's working for their districts and whatever transparency they need within those districts needs to be allocated out. The truth needs to be said. Teachers and parents need to be able to make that decision on, do I want to go to school? Do I, especially in this pandemic, do I want to send my kid? What options are actually there that you're helping me? Now, we know that the online here got shut down for a little while in the public school system. It was rough on them. And I can say I've seen that happen. And, you know, as a teacher, you just want to throw your hands up because, you know, you're there for a specific reason to get educated, to educate kids. And then they throw another wrench in it and then we're shut down for the whole thing. So making sure that those systems are spoke of in a transparent way. Things that are happening that are right, things that are happening that are wrong. Let the public have their say. It seems like sometimes they're set out into the dark, and that's what builds the anger so much, you know, is we don't know, and then they treat them like they're children, you know, and then the next thing you know, we have a different problem on our hands. So give it to them straight, give it to them raw.
Do you think schools are doing this in a transparent way, updating parents on the level of COVID-19 in districts?
I think so. I think there's no cohesiveness when I speak to the leaders here, and that's what they're begging for. So the districts are being transparent. The districts are trying to help their students and their parents and their kids and everybody they can. What's happening is the bureaucracy coming down the pipeline is the biggest thing. So streamlining that now, okay? Now we need to get over that. That's the pandemic. We get it, the money, we got all these other services that are out there, but we have no cohesion as it kind of goes. And I think superintendents feel a little bit betrayed at a time because they were told that they would be able to run their districts, okay, report to what they're seeing. And if serious things needed to be stepped into, the state would come in and they would help that. That's what they're there for. But what I'm hearing is different. There's no coherence between that. The conduit is broken. So they have that line of frustration there, I think. But from parents to district, yes, I think they're staying up on it with their parents and everybody. They have to, especially when online learning goes, it crashes. What do you do, right?
And when it comes to making plans for what the guidance should be to local schools during the pandemic, what should the role be of the superintendent of public instruction?
Well, to look over those plans, stay transparent with them. They're picking their districts and they're telling me what they need because they know their districts better. The superintendent of the state cannot be in every district. So I need to trust those superintendents. I need to have that full trust and say, listen, this is your district. Okay. We will give you your backing. What do you need? Let's get that done. Let's see how that goes and let's see how that works. We're here to support every single one of you. And when I say we, I mean, I'm not going to be the only one up there. I need a good team up there. And looking at the team that I would like and where it would be very beneficial because that team in every single district and the team that would be put together up there at the Hill would have to work very cohesively, okay? But again, the districts know better. They know what's going on with their children. They're very close to the situation.
How would this play out? Earlier this spring, there was that, you know, statewide level director for schools to close their doors because of COVID-19. Would you support, you know, in that situation, you know, a statewide issuance to schools on you got to close now? Or do you think those should be very specific local decisions?
I think those are local decisions and I wouldn't stab them in the back. That's what I think happened this year. I think districts knew they put in their plans. It was like a little fishing expedition to see who was going to comply and who wasn't. I felt, and our superintendents felt like they got the raw end of the deal on that because they put in their plans. They were ready to open. They knew what was going to go on. They know better what their health department's down in that specific area. What's going on? I'm going to trust those guys that got put in the position to be able to run those districts.
And just so I'm clear, stab in the back of being told to close their doors for a few weeks this spring.
They were told, do you feel that you're going to need to close? No, we don't feel that we're going to need to close. We're doing okay. We're with our health department down here. We're getting tested. We're staying at minimal levels. Okay. They have all the safety procedures they could possibly have in effect. I'm not saying we're not listening to the science. We're not listening to the data, because that's exactly what we're listening to. The school districts, I think, could make their choice on that data, on those statistics that are happening specifically in those towns and in those cities.
And looking to the next year, what should the superintendent of instruction be doing now or right when elected to deal with the uncertainty of what the virus is going to look like?
Oh, we need to be planning 2 years ahead. We need to get ahead of this thing. We need to get ahead of this online learning. We need to start putting these things into place where we have better opportunities to have more smarter technologies in our classrooms. Keep those teachers in that classroom. Even if we needed to rotate out, they could still report to schools, but have a full class on board with their smart boards and with their technology that they have. We really need to get that caught up to date.
Even before the pandemic, Montana was facing a teacher shortage. Some, especially in rural areas, they were having a hard time keeping some teachers around. What should be done? What can be done about this? What can you do if elected?
Well, I mean, that's been an Achilles heel for all of us across the country, not just here in Montana, correct? I would have to talk to those guys up there. I'd have to see what they were doing to recruit. How are we paying our teachers? You know, what is the union saying too? You know, I need to sit down with those guys, and kind of get a good wrap around the head on what's going on, because really, what I see, okay, and what is happening up there, two totally different ball games. So I can't really promise anything until I get up there, and I'll be as transparent as I possibly can to kind of fix that. But it was interesting you said that, because I was talking to the superintendent here, and we fully understand people are scared. I mean, teachers are nervous, and you know, teachers don't want to, some don't want to teach, and that's going to be another thing to reassure them with the new technologies that, hey, you can teach from home, or our buildings are safe. We're not seeing any kids in our buildings at a regular basis, or people. This is your classroom. This is safe, and the technology works. And it's safe, and you're going to be okay. We need you to do your best to bring that to the children.
You've talked a lot about technology in some of these answers. I'm wondering if there's, some specific advancements there you think that K-12 systems in Montana need to put in place.
We need better internet services. I mean, our kids and our families out there just don't have the services, because some of them didn't think that they were going to need it. Some of them couldn't afford it. And that's where maybe some of these voucher systems, and we could talk to some of these companies, okay, and say, listen, you know, which have already offered to say, we'll give people internet, okay? We'll get them out there. I think the end goal is to get kids back into classrooms. Let's be clear about that. We want kids do learn better. In some instances in schools, like our kids are on special needs. Okay, there's some kids that need to be in those classrooms, and we need to address that as well. And that's another population we've been kind of underskirting, is the special needs kids. And I deal with them every day. And I know the pain that their parents are going through, and I know the phone calls that I get, and to try to help them. The anxiety issues with technology, the ability not to be able to run. If it doesn't work, they have anxieties and they get nervous and things like that. So, to be clear, we do want them to come back. We do want all of that to happen. But I do think that there's great models out there that others are going to be like, I don't want to go back to high school. Okay, I like being at home. I like learning from this area, and I like this kind of platform. Or else we wouldn't see the online schooling companies being doing very well, would we? They would be out of business. So I think in all of that, and we've got to keep our eye on those special ed kids out there, those kids with special needs, and the eye on the ball that we're getting them back. We're giving going to give them those services, sending aides out to their houses, or doing those things, which gives us a whole different legality. I can't imagine sending teachers to people's homes. Can you imagine the legality on that? I mean, it's just what could happen. So a lot of stuff needs to be looked at, and looked at with a critical and open mind.
Want to hop on something else that has been, in Montana long before the pandemic on student academic success rates. Native American students have for years tested at proficiency rates much lower than their non-native peers. And as superintendent of public instruction, what could be done here to improve this?
Well, listen, I like I said, I taught on the Northern Cheyenne Indian Reservation, and my wife did too. She did Busbee, and we listened to the leaders out there and the elders. Okay, they love their culture. They love who they are. They love where they sit in that manner. However, they feel, like you said, that the educational side of it is, boom. There's already legislation to give them plenty of money. On my side, I would give them every support. Senator Windy Boy, about 4 years ago, I got in contact with him, because I was a specialty in charter schools, and I went up to the Hill with him to advocate for charter schools. So I know that they are out there who want this, and want this to move forward for their tribes, and for the native culture. I can't. They gotta want. You have to want to learn. And what we saw out there, the kids need to want to learn. You have to be able to do that. And they get that through their elders. They get that through their culture and who they are. And whatever I can do to support that when I'm up there, would be I would do. I would do the best I could.
When you talk about wanting to bring charter schools into Montana and have a system that is really built around that, is there a state that you look to as a model of, I want Montana to look like that?
Well, Utah has a very close population to us, and they run it very, very good. You have schools that would be, would love to be Native American schools, would love to be have that cultural surrounding around their charter. Okay, that might get them excited. Okay, you have others that are that like the suit and they like the hard academics, the college preps, and that's going to cater to that. So it showed that when the interest was there, the kids did better. Okay, and the parents were much happier. And the parents could pick a different school the next year if they want to. If something wasn't working in that school and they didn't like that way that was going, and they tried it, well, let's go try something else. Or maybe by high school, the kid wants to, I want to be a military academy, and they have military academy charter schools, and they're connected with those types of deals. So the change can go with them as they kind of go. And I think if you give them interest, you give them achievement.
Montana's education system and funding was kind of in a national spotlight earlier this year when the U.S. Supreme Court took up Montana tax credit program, ruling directly kind of took on, what does it mean for state dollars to be going directly or indirectly to, religious private schools?
Well, and what happened with that is that I think the court ruled correctly because there was a discrepancy within the legislature that didn't okay and it didn't make it fully in. I'm not going to pretend that I know that much about that case because a lot of it is held up there. It's not really given and funneled down to us candidates or the public, period.
In this race, you're facing Republican Elsie Arntzen and Democrat Melissa Romano. What is your kind of, you meet a voter on the street, what's your elevator pitch to voters on, why you're the best candidate?
Well, I'm not on party lines, that's for darn sure. We've had the same old routine, and that is listed if you look to some of our good scholars as being crazy. All right, we've tried this model, we've tried a whole bunch of other things. It's time for some creativity. It's time to move forward with education in a more, I would say, bipartisan way, but in a more aggressive manner. Our numbers haven't been coming up for years, and we've been seeing it over and over and over again. So I'm not saying they're not trying, because I'm sure it's really hard up there. What I would say is that we've been stagnant, and I don't put up with being stagnant.
Outside of the daily, being the superintendent of public instruction, dealing with K-12 public education, if elected, you'd sit on the state land board, which manages state trust lands. What would be some of your priorities if elected and were in charge of being on that board?
Yeah, listen, making sure it's accountability, and what we can open up for those things. I'm certainly the one for being libertarian, less taxes and less fees on our people when they go camping. Okay, all right, and they go do and they use our public lands, and who is using our lands? Let that be corporations or things of that nature. I am a huge fly fisherman, and I come from a very repressive state. Okay. New York, I was fortunate enough to live out in the country, but I saw developers take over. I saw my lands go bye-bye. I saw all of my ducks go bye-bye. I saw my birds, my fish, I saw all that. I can guarantee you that won't happen. I can guarantee it. I back our lands. I back what we do, our public use, and where we are, and using them responsibly and fiscally accountable, period.
Are there other issues that are important to your campaign that are that you want voters to know about?
No, I think we got that all in a nutshell, I think.
Kevin Leatherbarrow is a Libertarian candidate for Superintendent of Public Instruction. He's running against Republican Elsie Arntzen and Democrat Melissa Romano. Thank you for taking the time.